Backseat Book Club, Brave Men Run by Matthew Wayne Selznick.
This is Lena.
This is Scott.
And this is Tony.
And we are the Backseat Producers, and you are listening to Backseat Book Club. Welcome, Tony.
Hey, what's up?
Not much. Big Boss Man's joining us for our book this month.
Since I might have suggested it, yeah.
Yeah, and I may have called you out because I have grievances to air.
That's fine. That's fine.
Well, it's no fun if everybody likes it.
I'll be right, Scott.
Yeah, we can't, Anthony.
I like this. Tonight we are going to be discussing Brave Men Run by Matthew Wayne Selznick.
And what's our next book?
Our next book, because I actually have the window up, is Snow Crash by Neal Stephenson. And we already know that we will have some extra people there.
I might actually have to read. I have yet to have read Snow Crash. It's on one of my to read lists, and this might just be my excuse to check it out.
That's one you got to fix, because Snow Crash is cool.
I know. I'm aware of that. I'm looking at my Nook app on the 7 now, as it's come to be called.
The 7. I don't even think I got that book yet. I need to buy it for my Nook. No 7, just a sad little Nook. But it does what it needs to do. And it keeps me from having 8 million trillion pounds of books in my tiny apartment.
I'm looking it up now. It's $7.
Oh,
if you want the lesson plans for it, that's $19.
There's lesson plans?
Yeah, apparently.
Yeah, no, this is on high school reading lists.
Yeah, that's not a surprise.
And a couple, I know it's on a second year, the York University second year sci-fi English class.
Wow. List.
Right after Neuromancer. I got in a huge fight with someone about Neuromancer once who was in that class. I'm like, no, shut up.
I can't imagine you getting into a fight about something, Scott.
Especially not the punk genres. Those never get me riled up. I should also mention that, fingers crossed, we might go weekly for Snow Crash Month.
Oh, really?
Because I will, do, a thing about the punk genres. A follow-up review of Diamond Age, which is the pseudo-sequel to Snow Crash, and then, I guess comments, if those happen.
Wow.
And we may or may not, I think we might be able to swing an interview with Mr. Selznick for this book, too.
That would be so cool.
Depending on if he's offended by what Scott says or not.
Well, I'm not going to be mean. I'm not going to, you know, insult his dog or, like, threaten to kill his mother or anything.
No.
Just his livelihood. The dog off limits. Livelihood, go for it.
I'm sure his other novels are fine. This is a first effort.
Okay.
He has admitted it needs work by releasing a second edition.
There is a second edition that is due out.
Bear this in mind, that all of this will become invalid later.
That is a good point.
We hope.
I am curious to see the expanded and revised, which I believe is what he's referring to it as, edition of Brave Men Run, which is, I believe, part of one of the stretch goals for Pilgrimage, which was it's the sequel to Brave Men Run, sort of. It's another novel set in the Sovereign Era, which we'll get into the details of that. My understanding is it doesn't necessarily follow Nate Charters, though.
Yeah. I think he even early on he said that he doesn't have anything else for with Nate Charters as a main in mind.
And
And I'm.
that's understandable.
See, I would like to read a little bit more about it. When we get to the end of the book, then I was left a little cold by the end of it.
Okay, I'm gonna take executive producer privilege here for just a minute because I have a complaint. It has nothing to do with this book. It has to do with sort of because so there's a Kickstarter that just started. And the great thing is that this recording is time shifted, so people may or may not know exactly which item I'm talking about that was kickstarted if they could figure out when we recorded this. But there was a Kickstarter item that was started, I think, yesterday. And it's a sequel to a very popular game.
Kind of.
Kind of. It's a cult classic. And I'm on record with my love of this game and of the original.
Well, yeah,
So
because
I
it's
immediately
lovable.
it is really a lovable game. So I immediately bought into the Kickstarter. So I'm immediately in on the Kickstarter. And this morning, an email came out that disturbed me because at some point yesterday afternoon, they hit their goal.
Yes.
Their $900,000 goal. They
Wow.
started it yesterday morning. It hit the first goal yesterday afternoon. Fantastic. That's great. That means the game's going to get made. My money is going to get spent, and I'm going to get a copy of the game. The first stretch goal that they release says that with your money, we are going to make a richer, deeper story to the game. Just that statement alone disturbed me. Because you with the content from the original, if you don't have a deep, rich story to begin with, don't even bother.
Yeah.
Just don't. Just please, just don't even do it.
Like
I don't want a
the
game.
stretch, like at this point, the stretch goal should be like full voice acting.
Exactly. And maybe even some like named actors that they could potentially contract, you know, that they have like on retainer that if we hit a certain goal, we will be able to afford to pay for Mark Hamill or, you know, somebody really cool and famous to be a voice actor. No. We're gonna make a deeper, richer story. And then they start naming some of the people who they're hiring to write their deeper, richer story. And just the names that are being bandied about to deepen and enrich the story are like, yeah, I've read some of their work. It is neither deep nor rich. And it's like, a piece of me wants to just say, I want my money back. I want to rescind my offer for Kickstarter because I don't want that person working on my thing. It's mine because I Kickstarted it.
You are now a major shareholder in a B-tier video game company. That is how Kickstarter works.
I know, so fire that person because I don't like them.
Yes.
So
You
I'm
should
not gonna.
comment, you should actually bet, you should pull your money and email them and tell them why.
That's gonna go over. Like, okay. So I had to get it off my
No, this
chest.
is literally you voting with your dollars.
That is true.
Like,
It
I
is
mean
true.
that, like, I'm not a big person, I'm not a big beater of the support the industry drum, but this is literally an opportunity to vote with your dollars.
Yeah, I know, but the rest of me, I mean, right now that's a pretty small part, and the rest of me just wants a sequel.
Yeah.
You know? I can't get past that. That part is far, far outweighing the rest of it.
Yeah, I getcha. I getcha.
So, enough
So,
said on that.
enough about that.
Yeah, I would have talked about this. I would have talked to probably a little bit about just kickstarting the game in last night's recording, but we didn't record Backseat Producers last night. So, fortunately, I got that new piece of information this morning, so I didn't have to amend anything I'd already said.
This is just like the old backseat box office days where you guys talk about things I have no idea what you're talking about.
Well, I feel that this discussion could go there because I think I'm gonna have my opening salvo. My high level thoughts on Brave Man Run.
Yes.
Do it.
I liked this better when it was any Spider-Man origin story adaptation ever.
Spider-Man?
Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Not X-Men?
Oh no, they're like the X-Men stuff is definitely there, and I'm sure in one of the other we'll get to the X-Men parallels too. Okay. But if you're doing straight up teen hero overcomes awkwardness with okay. help of smoking hot girlfriend, it's pretty much Spider-Man.
Where they pulled lines straight from Spider-Man.
Like, they stopped trying. Like, at one point she just calls stupid jock guy Flash, and I'm like, yeah, no, that's who he is.
Yeah, she calls him Flash, and he's like, huh? She's like, don't worry about it.
Like... And while we're on that, the whole book is full of these stupid winking little nods to comic creators. Like, I don't think there was a single thing, like a single proper noun for a location that wasn't a creator's name.
Every park was a creator name.
Oh yeah, parks, streets. And at first, like the first two was like, okay, it's Ditko's Hardware on Kirby Lake. Okay. Nice little nod, I get it. You like Spider-Man, I like Spider-Man.
Ramita Park.
And then it just keeps going, and it just gets more and more slipshod. Like, no, what does Bob Kane have to do with anything?
Oh, so many things about this that I don't know. This is very interesting for me.
Well, I mean, this book is written for somebody like me. It was written to me.
Specifically.
Mostly. Yeah, because I was a comic book reader, and I was pretty close to the age of these characters at that time, at the time period that we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
I was just a couple of years younger.
1985, I believe.
Was it 85?
I think 85 or 87. I thought it was 85. No, it wasn't.
I don't think it was 87.
No, we have a definite time span because Breakfast Club came released. Out that month, so...
Yeah.
I am to the internet. 85.
Okay, so 85.
So saith IMDb.
Yeah, so 1985, and they were 15 or 16.
Yes.
I was 14 in 85. So, yeah, I was just a couple of years younger than them.
Mm-hmm.
See, and this is where we get... it again. I think, you know, they establish early on that, yes, it's 1985, and then it spends the first half of the book just hammering you with, yep, 1985. Let's reference things from that all the time.
Except there was really only two big references, and I mean, you could say, yeah, they reference music a lot.
Yeah, like, they had to point out the exact song title and artist.
Yeah, some of that.
And quote the lyrics.
It was a little bit much, but for someone that age in high school to know the band and the album and the artist and what the album looked like, that was just part of the culture. You just had to. If you didn't know the video, know who the artist was. I mean, at that age, watching MTV was such a huge part of who we were. Was that my friends and I had games that we'd created that just listening to the first few notes of the song, we would list off album, artist, track name. And if you could name who the producer, who the label was, you got bonus points because all that stuff's presented on every video on MTV at the time.
Yeah, yep. And I get that, but it's like, it's tangential to the story. Like when they do this in high fidelity, it's like, yeah, no, these are record geeks in a dick measuring contest. It's kind of, it says something about the characters every time they do it.
Right. Because
it spurns a discussion. Here it's just, okay, we get it. They're teenagers in the 80s. Like the third or fourth time it happens, I was just done.
I didn't think it was overkill. Not like,
honestly, Ready Player One.
Thank you. That was overkill.
Whipped their dick out and smacked you across the face with it.
Yes.
With all their references. It was that, those references got to the point of just absolute ridiculousness.
I didn't think this one was too bad. I like the whole thing with the police album covers because I remember that so vividly, and that was something important. If you, I mean, my friends and I were huge police fans, and that
Oh,
was.
especially if you were like a, because that one came out in like 82, and if you were like an 11-year-old boy and you got one of the ones that opened up and there was a bare breast, because there was one of them that had that on the inside cover, man, that was bonus right there.
Yep. I did not. And the only other things they didn't get too much into, but they mentioned Swatch watches. There were just, I mean, the movie, The Breakfast Club, fine. I did not think it was overkill with the 80s references. I also liked, since the book was, you know, it was kind of Nate's point of view, it seemed to really be written as a 15-year-old. It wasn't.
Yeah, I don't like 15-year-olds. They're giant assholes.
Ay, ay, ay.
You know what? He's right.
Well, yeah.
He is right about that.
Name
Well,
a 15-year-old you have enjoyed spending more than an hour with.
I'm simple. Well, I'm kind of comparing it to, if you think about Gossip Girl or something, those stupid shows that are full of teenagers that have the vocabulary of PhDs
Yeah,
that
see.
know that annoys the shit out of me.
Yeah,
I
but
liked
see.
the.
I was a 15-year-old who did talk like that, and that's why Clerks spoke to me as much as it did. All right, so what's this story about, Scott, before we get, since
Okay.
we're just bashing it left and
Well,
right,
we did the high
bashing through
level and
different.
then sidetracked.
Did we all give high level? I think Scott gave it his high level, or was that just high level what the book's about?
I think that was no, that was my high level review.
Okay.
All right, so
So as I was saying, this book was written for me because it's full of 80s stuff at the time. It's full of comic book references. There were a lot of comic book references. They could have pulled some of them way back. The pacing in this book is a little bit jacked up. There is a point in the middle where it becomes about stuff that it's not really about.
Well, it doesn't
For
have
a couple
anything to be
chapters.
about until like the last third anyhow.
Yeah,
Yeah, yeah.
and there are some gaping plot holes in it.
Well,
Like
yeah.
huge that like characters do things that don't make sense, that don't have any resolution, with the exception of we need them to be in this place at this time to interact with this character so we can pull them in later.
Yes.
Byron.
Byron? No, not Byron. Actually, the stuff with Byron, that was some of the better stuff. I actually kind of liked that, what happened there. What
Okay.
I'm
I
talking about
we're we're
specifically is after the Sovereign event happens, they run off to the cabin overnight for no apparent reason and
Yeah.
with no resolution. It's like, we're gonna leave town. Okay, leaving town makes sense.
If you are freaking out, you leave, yes.
Freak out, you leave. But there was never any intention to stay there for more than a day and a half, and then you just come back like nothing happened. That made, honestly, that made no sense. The only reason that appeared to have happened was so we could have the scene where he meets Denver, Colorado.
But
That's
yes.
honestly, now, if she intended to meet somebody up there, and that was part of it, we never saw any of that. And so therefore, it didn't really make sense why that happened.
Yeah. Like he had a set piece and then worked backwards and then even didn't get that right.
Right. Yeah,
Like
no.
it's like the Spielberg method, but half cocked.
Yeah, I wouldn't
Now, I will say, and I'll preface this up front, I've been on record about this too. This was one of the early patio books that I listened to.
It was an early patio book.
It was,
Stop.
it was one of the first few patio books. I was listening to it as it was being released in real time, and I got to the point where I was probably on about chap. I was in episode 9 or 10. It ended up being 15 episodes, and I was. I so wanted to know what was going on. I was still actively reading comic books on and off at the time. So I just wanted to know what happened. I felt compelled to know. I bought the book. I bought the book just so I could get to the end before having to wait for the next 5 or 6 weeks or however long, because at that point I didn't even know how many more episodes there would be.
Yeah.
But I bought the book just so I could get to the ending quicker.
All right, but before we get even any deeper, let's do the plot summary.
I think did Lainey give her?
No, I'll do it afterwards. Do give the summary before the show's over.
Okay. So in 1985, Nate Charters has all the superpowers of a house cat. And this makes him gawky and awkward and weird, as a human house cat might be. And one day he gets home from school to find out that Magneto has made a press conference addressing the world that he will totally screw up everyone royally if they mess with any superpowered people because they're real. Whereupon he begins a journey of self-discovery, reconciles with his long-term bully, and then fights an evil scientist because that's what you do when you're a teenage superhero.
Oh, and inexplicably starts macking on Mary Jane.
Oh yeah, and he gets the manic pixie dream girl falls into his lap and never really leaves.
Yes.
Dig it. I didn't think it was so bad. I didn't, you know, I don't know all the comic book references, so that.
Well, no, you even just setting aside the comic book references. The book sets up that it's not going to be the typical, like, it's not a superhero origin story. It has people with superpowers, but
Right.
it's not about tights or anything. So it positions itself as a coming of age story, except he really doesn't, like, Nate doesn't have anyone to work against.
Yeah.
Like,
Right.
everyone, like, all his friends already know he's weird and are cool with it. All the authority figures he encounters, except for the evil scientist, seem to be all right with him.
And the girlfriend likes him because of it.
Like,
That's what
yeah.
drew her to him.
Like, I wanted her so much to be, like, to turn out to be evil. Like, be a
I
plant
kind of, you know,
secret agent.
for a
Because she's
while I
just
thought
too
she was going to
nice.
be, yeah.
Like,
For a while, I was wondering if that was going to be a twist.
she's absolute wish fulfillment more than anything else.
Yep.
So, like, there the book has no conflict that lasts more than 3 chapters until evil scientist guy shows up.
Yeah, even the well, I think that the only conflict that lasts longer than that is Byron.
Yeah, and
And
I.
he's a conflict for the first half of the book, except that we really don't even get introduced to him until a couple of chapters in.
Well, no, it's the first thing that
Oh, that's
happens
yeah,
is
that's right.
that
Yeah,
he
when
a
he's eating
milk carton
lunch
gets
and.
thrown at him, but then he like wanders off. Like he dodges the milk carton and then okay, I guess this is like I mean, it's a solid opening. It's very evocative of a person you knew in high school, but like Byron wanders off and doesn't join the plot again for a few more chapters.
Right.
Did
Like
anyone
the first half of this book is really meandery.
else find it weird that Byron, you then find out later that Byron is also a sovereign?
Well, no, I think
No.
that works because I think there's part of me like around chapter 8 or 9, I thought this was going to be like superpowers as homosexuality, and this would be like a big giant coming out metaphor. Like the X, which is where the X-Men parallel comes in.
Right.
So you almost get the idea that Byron is sort of the self-hating minority member, and that's why he's always picked on the other one, on Nate. And then that just doesn't go anywhere.
Well, they didn't do that, but
Well,
it does his bullying that comes from being abused by his father does make I mean, that is a logical character
like it makes he makes
point.
sense as a character.
Yeah. And To be quite honest, I did kind of like the fact that they're like, yeah, he's a jock. He's really good at every sport he's in. Every sport. Most jocks aren't good at everything. They're good at a couple of things. But even a jock that's good at one sport gets notoriety in high school. If you're a jock in every sport and you're a star of every sport, that's suspicious. And when you start getting to the point of, hey, there's people with superpowers, they may not even know it. Yeah, you start looking at those kids who are all-stars,
Exceptional. Yep.
either mentally or physically. The kids that get straight A's. There was a kid in my high school who came to class one day in March as a senior and was like really bummed out. And I was like, what is wrong with him? He missed a point in calculus today. Oh, he got dinged on his grades. No, it was the first point that he missed the whole year in
Wow.
calculus in March.
Oh
This
my
is one of
God.
those kids. This is one of those guys that what the SAT is like 1600. He got a 1580.
That was probably a bad day for him too.
When he went to college, they created a program for him at Coral Gable. They created a major program for him because he didn't want just something that was out of the book. I mean, that's the kind of kid who there's something weird about that.
Well, okay. Getting back to Byron, and here's the, one of these little plot holes we mentioned is, okay, so the fight happens, and I have a rant about the fight for later, but the fight happens, and before that he mentions that yeah he thinks he's sovereign, but he doesn't go into why, and then the fight happens, and then 4 chapters later, everyone seems to know what his power is, like they talk about it like he's super jock slash Darwin from X-Men without ever actually explaining that. And I'm pretty sure I would remember that getting explained because the book likes to info dump.
That's true.
Yeah, I would have
But see,
I would have
that's also about the point in the book where, quite honestly, in listening to it, there was a few scenes that I just kind of checked out in because it's like nothing is happening. We're at a party. We're hanging out at a party, and everybody is acting normal. This
Except for the
doesn't
one
make
guy who's a
any
jerk.
sense. Yeah, this doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, like the
Why?
one guy is a jerk, and then immediately someone comes and is all reasonable at Nathan. It's
Yeah.
like, stop being reasonable. There is no drama in reasonable.
There were a lot of sections I just wish he would have expanded.
See, no, because then he would have expanded with it with more explaining what he feels. And I'm done with hearing about how Nate Charters feels. He has three emotions.
Go on.
Nate Charters has three emotions here. It's upset, lonely, and angry.
Yeah. I don't know,
But the narration doesn't want you to think badly of him for being an awkward 15-year-old, so he's constantly analyzing why he feels that way. So you'll just please, please understand my pain. Like even the fight, which we mentioned, like the Byron and Nate are talking in a park, and then Byron's cronies show up, and they egg each other into a fight. And even as that happens, like a better story would have presented it as like sort of a betrayal and a psych out and just more bullying, and then later resolved it as no, that was an accident. But even as that's happening, when the narration should just be clouded with his emotions and let, just have the hormones take over and have the fight happen. No, it's analyzing the situation and saying, yeah, no, they probably showed up on their own, and now I'm letting myself get egged on because I'm angry because
Now,
his friends are
see, I'm going to
jerks.
disagree with you here a little bit, Scott. I think the better story would have been Byron coming to him and saying, "I think I'm a sovereign because I'm so fucking awesome at everything I do." And then his buddies show up and egg them onto a fight, and Nate guts him again, like he did before, like he did in the story. It turns out, you know what? Byron's not a sovereign. He just really is good at all that stuff. And he gets killed.
Yeah.
That is a more interesting story.
It
Because
is.
there's really is no conflict for Nathan in this. Everything goes away.
And that was the
Even
whole
his
stuff.
daddy issues.
Which just it's kind of thrown at you. You've and that's the most busy chapter. The father shows up. I don't even know who they are.
Swamp Thing.
The Swamp Thing. The agents show up. There's guns. There's gutting of people. There's disintegration of people. And then he's gone.
I
And
like
then
that.
that was good.
I like that.
That was very good. And then it's explained very quickly. And then, not too far later, you're at the
It's just
end, and
done.
things are wrapped up too often in that. Like the whole thing with Byron going off to the institutes. It's well, he wanted to be with his own people. Okay.
Well, I think, and they established that he'd have taken anything over his family life,
And
which
although I understand
Oh,
that,
yeah.
I buy that,
I do,
but
absolutely. But it's just he wanted to be with his people. Next subject.
I'm
It's
moving
like
on.
three sentences and we're done. Three
Like it,
sentences and we're done.
you know what it's like? The second last chapter of every Harry Potter book, where, Dumbledore shows up and explains away every question, and then Harry gets to win the house cup and go home.
Yeah, and Dumbledore never takes any kind of heat for being a gigantic dickbag and putting an 11 through 17 year old in these impossibly terrible circumstances that he always puts him in.
Dumbledore, terrible parental figure.
Oh,
Yeah.
Harry's an orphan. Who's going to complain about
Harry, I read the fifth book.
it?
But I mean, I think it could have been a much more intriguing story if there was more to it. Just things, events happened and they were done. And
Well,
then we
here's
move
the
on.
thing is,
Which
I
is your whole
think.
thing with like everyone is okay with everything.
Yeah, like he meets he meets Mary Jane's dad, and Mary Jane's dad is like, "Ooh, oh, you seem like a nice fellow who's had some tough times. Have this shirt. Go
Yeah,
take a
and
nap." Like, what the hell?
her father's a politician, so again, as I'm reading, I'm thinking, oh, this is going to be good. This is going to be tension. Because he's not going to trust sovereign people. He's going to, nope, no problem at
He's
all.
going to be
Because
crazy and right wing and, extra mean, and then no, he's
their son is a
reasonable.
savant with numbers. So that's okay too. It's, yeah, everyone was just not so much too happy, but everyone was so accommodating. And even, yeah. Even when he gets in trouble in school, they kind of wag their finger at him, but then just say, "All right, off you go now. I don't want to have to wag my finger at you a second time. So now you go." There, I needed more. I needed to sink my teeth into something more, and to get, I needed to feel the tension. And only in that one big fight scene, that was the only tension, because I kept thinking, "Well, the father's gonna die. Maybe the girlfriend's gonna die. Maybe the mother's gonna die." I kept waiting for someone who meant something to die. Didn't happen.
Like I was, or consequences of any kind.
Even with the girlfriend, and she's traumatized or injured or what have you, and she has to go spend the night in the hospital. And her parents, when he shows up the next day, her parent, the father's like, "Sure, come on in." What? What? I didn't know. If everything's just too nicey-nicey, I can't have that.
I'm curious to see what the expanded and revised edition is going to give us.
Very much so.
Well, and I've got a few other points here. Like, okay, so early on they established like the broader setting, I think, kind of caught my interest, and I'm like, okay, so you've got Donner pulling the Magneto shtick, and they talk about how Reagan is sitting down with Magneto, and I'm like, where's that story? Can this be that story?
Exactly. Yes.
Nope.
I so much want more of that. That is really interesting to
Like,
me.
so at this point,
Yes.
the promise of the novel is, okay, Nate's one of these sovereign guys. He's gonna join sovereign society, and it's gonna be a metaphor for coming out, like I thought it would be, like every other, like half of teen superhero dumb. And then it just doesn't happen. Like, he doesn't leave town, and town is boring. Like, I wanted to see the bigger stuff,
You
and
know
it
what?
just was small the whole time.
There was another weird thing for me. His mother. I mean, obviously, she knew who slash what he was his entire life. She is distrustful of pretty much everybody. She immediately accepts the girlfriend. There's maybe 10 seconds of her being a little pissy. When the girl comes the next time, she's perfectly fine with her. When the whole thing with William Donner and the Sovereign people come out, she understandably flips out over it. But then at the end, and that's that whole, my whole issue with the end wrapping up so pleasantly. She's there with the Sovereign lawyers, and they're going to help us, and even with the Sovereign Institute, she was distrustful of it earlier in the book. But then at the end, well, these are the Sovereign lawyers, they're going to help us. Everyone's a happy family. Yay. Here's a note from your father. Yay. I needed something, nothing to sink my teeth into. Nothing really dirty, nothing, no huge conflict. There's a lot of potential there, but it just kind of peters out.
Oh, here's another thing that gets me. So this is the first one in the first novel in this setting. So they introduce that you have like the metahumans who are, the secret society that are now coming out. Okay, that's fine. I can deal with that. And then it's like, oh, also the government has nanotech, and you're not really a genetic mutant. You're like a modified human being. Like you set up the rules and then immediately make your main character an exception. Which I think is awkward for introducing a setting. Also, I really don't buy nanotech in 1985.
Actually, the nanotech would have been in the late 60s.
Well, I mean,
Because
I
the
just.
nanotech was actually in Dad.
Yeah, that.
Yeah.
Good point.
The nanotech wasn't even in 85. The nanotech was in like 68.
Which is just no. There weren't even people on the moon. And you're telling me you've got nanobots? I don't buy that. Give me nukes. If you're gonna be Silver Age Marvel, nukes. Nukes solve everything.
Yeah. And the more I think about it, the more little things like Denver, Colorado. He's there, he's gone. He's there, he's gone.
I don't have a problem with that. Especially the way they introduced him. It
Oh.
was it was it was a stumbled upon character. I don't like how they forced the situation that he was stumbled upon.
Yeah.
But
Like he, there are 800 other ways to stumble him in,
yeah.
and
Stumbled upon characters like that, though, are, I mean, that's a trope of the hero's journey.
yeah.
Yeah, you have that fool character that comes in and gives you information unexpectedly that you don't expect, one, that character to be worthwhile at all, and then they unexpectedly give you information that is groundbreaking for your hero. So I
Except the
didn't.
hero doesn't journey in this one.
No.
Not really.
This needed more hero's journey.
Yeah.
It really did.
Like, even if it's a coming of age story, that's still a metaphorical journey. Like, I don't feel like he's self-actualized at the end of this.
No, and I think the biggest problem is that this is the end of Nate Charter's story. Because this is a fine origin story. It's okay. But this needs to be the jumping off point,
Yeah.
not the story. If this is the whole story, there needs to be harder reality to it. Because if this is the only time we're going to see this character, there needs to be real consequences to the things that's happened in and around him, not just that he saw people explode. The worst thing that happened to him is that he cut a guy with his bare hands. And that, to be fair, that can be fairly traumatic. And he saw people explode in front of his face. And he saw his girlfriend with a gun to her head.
And he went a whole day without sleep.
Oh my God.
Which is hard for a house cat. For the record, if you haven't read the book yet, I am not making these house cat analogies.
No.
I'm not pulling these out of my butt. Like, this is basically how he explains his superpowers to people.
And he even says that at one point.
Yes, he does.
And somebody is like, so what, you always land on your feet?
It's, I mean, I still like the book. I enjoyed the story. I needed there to be more to it. It's, you know,
honestly,
it's kind of like,
honestly, I didn't need more. I needed to be, with the story they told, I needed to be streamlined. Because I think there was a lot of fat in the book that could have been cut.
Oh, yeah.
Again, them going to a party in the middle of all this chaos just didn't make any sense.
Yeah.
It's like, I can see...
Well,
hey,
it's just there to set up that, okay, we know where we're gonna stash Byron, except then the plan goes wrong, and they never explain how or why, despite the book's love of exposition after the fact.
Yeah.
And you know,
it's
I just
like
thought...
we're gonna break him out, and we're gonna drop him at our friend's house. Oh, there's cops and evil scientist somehow.
I just
which
thought
is
of
just there
else.
To force you back to the cabin.
When they went to the party and Byron showed up at the party, didn't he say he found out where he was? He went to his house and asked his mother.
Yeah, because his mom would tell people
Thank
where her
you.
Son went
because
when she's this hopped up on paranoia.
She doesn't know Byron. She's telling this total stranger in the middle of all this freak outishness where the son is. And as I was reading it, I thought, well, that was the stupidest explanation.
And you know what? I'm sorry, but it seems that Nate and his mom have a fairly decent relationship at the beginning of the story.
Yeah.
Like you would imagine that if he's being picked on, he would have mentioned Byron before.
Mm-hmm.
Picked on for 6 years?
Something like that.
Minimum?
You know, because yep. Didn't they...
Eight?
Meet,
no,
they,
8 years.
They, yeah, they met in, like, first grade or kindergarten.
That's right, because he said, like, 2/3 of his life.
Yeah, so, you know, I can see a 15-year-old not running home and telling mommy you're picked on. No, that would not have happened. Mm-hmm. But in first...
She knows
second,
the name Byron...
Yeah, in first through fifth grade.
From a lot of parent-teacher conferences.
Oh, and you know who, you know which kids are the dickbags at school.
Oh,
I'm
yeah.
sorry.
Yeah.
I know which kids are the assholes at Holden School, because there are some.
And I'm sure all you parent, I'm sure all you parents, like, hang out and tell stories.
Oh, yeah.
About who's got the dickbag kids.
Which kid spent the night and dropped the F-bomb.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, that's the one.
And also because when they were very young, they were very good friends. So
that was like for a week.
Yeah.
Well, but yeah, but wouldn't the mother know this?
No.
Okay.
Not necessarily. No. Not at that age. Because you know what? We can go to like Target and we're standing there looking at something that we're debating on purchasing. And there's another little girl an aisle over, another little 4 to 6 year old girl, and Aaron will go start playing with her. And it's like, who's that? That's my new best friend. Well, what's her name? I don't know.
Yeah.
It's like, she just invited her to your birthday party. It's like, what? You don't even know who that person is. She's my best friend. Can we call her to invite her to my birthday party? Sure. You'll forget all about this tomorrow. Yeah, this, no, I'm fine with that.
Okay.
Yeah. Like, I will buy that. That is exactly how friendship works when you're six.
Yeah.
Okay.
Playground friendship is completely different than anything else.
I accept this. Would you recommend this book to other people?
Well, who is it for? other than Tony.
Tony's friends.
Yes.
I think people who have an interest in comic books and who have an interest in that coming-of-age superhero kind of story.
Who haven't read a lot of coming-of-age superhero stories, though.
That's fair.
Because I think spent a lot of time hip deep in X-Men or read any of Ultimate Spider-Man. You've seen this done better.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. No, I agree with that.
Or even Buffy. If you've seen Buffy, you don't need to read this.
That said, I am really curious about Pilgrimage. Because I want to know more about Donner and the Sovereigns.
See, that's the thing. I would be okay with this setting. Like, I want the story that is Reagan and Magneto. Yeah, you know, like, trying to hash out. You know,
I would love. You know what I would love? I would love somebody to make some Marvel data files of some of these characters and play a Marvel heroic role playing game hack.
Well, rumor has it that the very like the earliest version of the Sovereign Era setting was like a Champions game.
That's we could ask.
I actually may have gone through the supplemental materials in the audiobook version.
You know, hoping
to mine for content for this.
There you go. Look at Scott doing
supplementary reading, listening something.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. So. And he did drop a little bit of information about potential follow-ups for what could come out in Pilgrimage, the sequel.
Mm-hmm.
He mentioned a few other sovereigns and that like one of them died during the time that was Pilgrimage during the Pilgrimage.
Like I think this setting is worth mining a bit.
Sure.
I'm not sure this was the story to start it with.
It needed a little more raw reality. It needed consequences. It needed characters that we cared about. It needed death, disfigurement, permanent change, especially if you're never going back to them.
Yeah.
Who cares if you kill Nate Charter's girlfriend if you're never going back to him? Leave this angsty, non-sovereign nano freak and you know, make him like this
ultimately happen. I think this story should have been about him, you know, sort of him and the sovereigns mutually rejecting each other over the shit that went down at Kirby Lake.
And you know what would have been an even cooler twist is having his girlfriend and his mom die and his dad die in that final conflict, having everybody fucking die. And this all of a sudden is not a hero's origin. This is a villain's origin.
This is a radical terrorist's origin.
Because I would have liked that. Yeah.
That could have been really cool.
Yeah.
And like, then he swears that Brenthurst is his enemy, and I'm like, I don't care because the book is three chapters from done.
Right.
Like, if he gets a book two where he is, like, tracking this guy around and just exploding his labs, great. But right now, this is just it's easy.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess we're drawn up on finality. Thumbs up or thumbs down, Lena?
I'm leaning more towards thumbs up. It, you know, it's got its holes, it's got its issues. I still enjoyed it more than I had issues with it. So, yeah, I'll go thumbs up.
All right, Tony?
You know, my memory of this book, I have a lot fonder memory of it. And maybe this is in part because I've become more a critic since the first time I listened to this.
Which would have been in, what, 2005?
2005, yeah.
Yeah.
At which I wasn't doing, yeah. At that point, I was still probably talking about the idea of maybe doing a podcast.
Tony.
Yeah.
A much younger Tony.
But more naive.
Unworldly in his ways.
I wouldn't go that far.
Okay.
But I think I was appreciative just to have a story like this, when there were a few good examples of prose superhero stories.
Yeah, I think, well, since this, there's been sort of a boom of them.
But there's still, even the boom of them still isn't as good as going back to, like, Wild Cards.
Yeah, true. Although I do still want to read, like, Once Crowded Sky. And, Tony, yeah. you should read Soon I Will Be Invincible.
What is that?
It's a book by Austin Grossman.
Mm-hmm.
And it is one of the best Lex Luthor stories ever.
Really?
Like, up there with Megamind.
Well, that's... You sold.
Note that I don't actually reference real Lex Luthor stories when I talk about Lex Luthor stories.
Yeah, I mean, so far, my favorite Lex Luthor story is one of the backups in Man of Steel. Like, the John Byrne Man of Steel.
Yeah.
There was two Lex Luthor stories that are character defining. And like, when I think of Lex Luthor, that's what I go back and think of Lex Luthor as. Not the megalomaniac, world destroyer, you know, glowing battle armor Lex Luthor. This guy is a distrusting megalomaniac, but he's smart enough to be more subtle about it. But he's also just cruel. One of the best scenes was when he had this computer that he set up to help him figure out who Superman was, and the computer flat out told him Clark Kent is Superman, and Lex Luthor said, "Dismantle this machine. It's
completely flawed.
It's clearly flawed because no man with that much power would humble himself to that level." That just doesn't make sense. Your computer is terrible. It's broken. Dismantle it. Don't waste my time or money again.
I think at one point wasn't it John Byrne, super Lex Luthor, who once uttered one of my favorite lines in comics is double the Superman killing budget for next month.
I think so.
Like that was another B story about him receiving financial reports and how his plans had been foiled. It's like, double next month's Superman killing budget.
Yep. Yeah, and the other one was just this very simple story where he goes to this small town diner and basically coaxes his waitress into giving up her life, dumping her fiance, running off with him. And when she comes back to the table to tell him she's ready to go, he's gone.
Ooh.
Yeah, just cold and evil. And it's just and he did this just because he was hungry. He just happened to stop there.
You wanted pie.
That's good.
And that's Lex Luthor. That's the cool Lex Luthor. That he's just that manipulative.
That is good.
Anyway, I need to remember what the name of that book is, Scott, so I can.
Okay. That's a really good one.
I think I need to give a thumbs up or thumbs down.
Yes, you do.
Yes,
yeah. I'm still gonna go thumbs up, because I do still enjoy the story. I think it could be better. I think it could be improved upon.
Yep.
And God damn it, I love the setting.
The setting of the '80s, or
the setting of the Sovereign Era.
Oh,
just that whole concept. Mm-hmm. And I really do want to see what comes out of Pilgrimage and the Expanded Revised Edition, because my understanding is, like, he's hiring editors and things like that to really help flesh out the story and make it better.
I'm very interested in this.
He's a big proponent of DIY. And that's awesome, but at some point you do need to bring in other
and that was the thing that kind of struck me. I appreciate what he's doing, but like, you know, even back then, you know, when you finish listening to this book, he's like, "And I'm available to edit your fiction for you." I'm like, I don't think I want you to edit my fiction.
That's fair.
Yeah.
It needed an edit. It needed a good hard edit.
Yep.
And And I, you know, I've done some editing. I know what editing can be, and it's you know, it's tough to edit your own work. There was clearly points in this that were really labors of love, and you could see that with the music and the references to the 80s. That's, I mean, you do that kind of thing because you fondly remember it. You're doing it out of nostalgia, and it gets tough when you really need to make the tough cuts and bleed out the story a little bit to skinny it up or beef it up, you know, to what Lena wanted. Or just to really cut through the exposition and tell a good story, and not just, you know, let the story be told and not tell the story, I should say.
Scott, do we need to ask you if it's a thumbs up or a thumbs down for you?
More from the setting, less from this, but from someone else. And maybe that someone else is just Selznick with, you know, 8 more years of experience and a couple of editors, but I think, you know, there are ideas here worth it. I just, you know, this is not reflective of your best work. See me after class.
That's fair.
Yep. I think that wraps up the book club here.
That it does. Catch you next time around for Snow Crash.
Thanks
Thanks
for
for letting me.
joining us, everybody.
Thank you for letting me join you guys.
We're
All
very
right.
happy to have you, Tony. Thank you.
All right. See ya.
Bye-bye.
Backseat Book Club is a Backseat production. Visit backseatproducers.com for more shows. Join the discussion and make suggestions for books on goodreads.com. Music by Kevin MacLeod.